Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
You women have heard of jalopies, you've heard the noise they make, but let me my new Rocket 88. Yes, it's straight, just one way.
All right, we are back with another live edition of the main course, OG. Wow, that's so exciting. That was Rocket 88 with everyone's favorite drummer, Ike Turner. And Rocket 88, that was the first rock and roll song ever recorded. Likewise, the main course was the first radio show ever to record on the Heritage Radio Network. And these two shipping containers broadcasting live out of Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We are in studio today. Oh, it's very exciting to have everyone back. Really exciting. We have Elizabeth Greeley.
Good morning.
Emily Pearson.
Hi.
We have Brandon Hoy, the owner of Roberta's. He's happy to be back. We have Mike Edison.
This is all I have left in my life.
Now the Arts and Seizures was canceled. Oh, no, wait. You quit because you got to 250 episodes.
I went out on top, Daddy-O.
On top.
Me and Jerry Seinfeld.
250, a quarter millennium right there.
You're going to be seeing me driving around in my Porsche with comedians drinking coffee soon.
Oh, nice. I am Patrick Martins, one of your hosts. And our special guest for the panel and for the weekly grill is Daniel Holzman of the Meatball Shops and Project Foodie. This is awesome. The whole crew is back. So without further ado, I will forward it to our two point guards. We're a two point guard basketball team here. Libby and Emily to take us through today's events.
Is Dennis Rodman a point guard?
Yeah, well, did he ever? He probably dribbled the ball in some dramatic moment to half court and then.
I don't think so.
There was a turnover. All right, yeah, well, take sure. us the.
So we have some great topics today from Mama Joanna, and we have some celebrity name drops, Ariana Grande to Bob Dylan. So we cover a lot, so let's jump right in. So how do you guys feel about public displays of affection while you're eating? People magazine reports that Ariana Grande was recently spotted at Cabon with her fiancé, and sources say they were making out all over the pasta. He even moved to the other side of the booth to make out some more. How do we feel about this?
Daniel?
Listen. If you live in the Instagram era and you're excited about taking photographs of all things food and restaurants and restaurant culture, then that's amazing. What better could you have for your Instagram fodder than pictures of Ariana Grande making out next to your pasta? I mean, otherwise you were just taking pictures of their like rigatoni.
I say if you go all the way, then I'm for it. But like first base, second base, not interested.
Did you say the restaurant Kaboom? Because that sounds like a seriously awesome restaurant. Let's just skip to this. Can I eat at Kaboom? Does this exist?
You can have sex in the pasta at Kaboom.
I will put my in the pasta.
Carbone.
Okay. First of all, the celebrity name drops. Like, don't mention Ariana Grande in the same sentence with Bob Dylan. That's just not kosher. That's not right. Okay. Sorry. But I'll tell you this about sex in restaurants. You can get away with a lot if you sit in the corner bank at.
Whatever happened to tablecloths, speaking of that? I feel like tablecloths were like the ultimate cover-up.
The ultimate cover-up?
Yeah, you can't get a handy without a tablecloth.
It's like a blanket on an airplane.
Yeah, Patrick didn't catch that. It's okay.
Sorry, I got it. Sorry.
Under the blanket. Well, I don't know. It's very European to sit. Patrick and I were talking about this yesterday. Sitting side by side, I think, is very lovely when you're a couple.
I don't like sitting across. If it's just two people, we sit side by side. That way we see the
restaurant.
I was on
a second date once, and he came into the booth right next to me. I was like, what?
Wow.
What's going on
here? Also feel like if they're side by side, they're too close to my food.
I just don't want to watch other people while I'm eating. I'm more concerned as another patron in the restaurant.
So can we agree that it depends upon who's making out?
Yeah, are they hot? Sure. Like, if it was Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward, 100%. That's cool.
But how about recent Paul Newman and Joanne? Like,
or no, what about Robert Redford? with the plastic surgery and Joanne Woodward, who I think has passed away. That would be terrible.
There's no coming back from that. That's the end of the show, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, and by the way, we're engineered by Vitor, who is back from Brazil. Tudo bem, Vitor?
Tudo bom. Tudo bom.
Did that mean Patrick said it right?
I don't know quite what I said.
Yeah, it sounded pretty good.
All right.
It's getting there.
We could have a lesson on air. All right, our next one is our friend and fellow Heritage Radio Network host of The Farm Report, Lisa Held, has a new piece up on Civil Eats about the future of school lunches. But unlike Edible Schoolyard and Wellness in the Schools, this one is for profit. Just wait, I'm not done. The company is called Brigade, and it has received a lot of attention since its launch in 2016, primarily because it was founded by Dan Justy, who ran the kitchen at Noma in Copenhagen. It's also one of just a few for-profit companies like Revolution Foods and Gourmet Gorilla in a space that's mostly filled with nonprofits. The company first started in New London, Connecticut, and this fall the company is launching its second project at 6 schools in the Bronx here in New York City.
All right, Mike, are you for this or against it?
You know, Patrick, it's something you said, it's something you wrote, and I quote you all the time, that you should never buy food by a company that's publicly traded. And this seems to be edging close to this. It doesn't say publicly traded, but it's for profit in a space that's not for profit. I mean, they should not be looking at a bottom line when you're feeding, like, kids in underserviced areas.
Well,
end of story.
First of all, nonprofits have to make profits, too. I have always worked in nonprofits. Slow Food, the Museum of Food and Drink, Heritage Foods, which unfortunately is a nonprofit, even though it's a for-profit. But, you know, I'm always a believer in this. I've called for the creation of a restraining order from certain board members to come within 500 feet of a nonprofit because they're so mediocre and destructive. There's something about nonprofit boards.
Yeah, it's called lack of accountability.
Slow things down. They are lack of accountability, and they actually kill ideas. I'm seeing it right now in some of those nonprofits I just mentioned. They kill ideas.
They're called hippies.
They close ideas. I think their heart's in the right place, but they're so anti-capitalist and so anti-visionary. They shouldn't be on a visionary board. So I love that a for-profit comes. I have loved my chance for when I worked with SoFu with nonprofit people from Vermont and Portland, Oregon, and blah, 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 to the business side of things. Some people screw me over and don't pay, but basically it's a clean transaction. You pay for a service and you get paid and it's nice. So I'm all for this. I don't think they're doing a great job feeding the schools anyway, all those nonprofits. And who knows what really goes on behind
the scenes. I think
it's
a challenge, you know, from what I read in the piece on Civil Eats, and Lisa definitely does her due diligence here, is that they are going into school systems in lower income areas. I guess New London, Connecticut, more than a quarter of the population is below the poverty line. And they're working with the school superintendents where they already have budgets from the USDA, they said, for free breakfast and lunch in the schools. And they're putting those dollars towards something that is also, I guess, working with chefs and people who want to be there and who want to do this because they aspire to create delicious food and to do something, but they don't need to be in a fine dining setting. And we all know labor and recruitment and retaining people is very difficult. I don't know if this means their salaries are any higher, you know, from a cook's perspective, but...
Why don't we just back it up and say that anybody that's trying to do good for kids and trying to feed kids is wonderful. And if you happen to carve out a bit of a profit at the end of it, well, you know, maybe that holds you accountable to doing a better job than the nonprofits where there's really no accountability. Ultimately, you know, the government doesn't do a particularly great job of it and no one else. On one hand, on the other hand, you know, anybody that has kids will tell you that getting them to eat is the primary goal. And, you know, the public school system feeds millions and millions and millions of children every single day successfully. So I think it's like, you know, it's like a kind of a Make America Great Again scenario where it's like, is it really not great? It's kind of already great. It could be better.
It's pretty bad food.
I mean, I went to public school. It was delicious. Those burgers were
I don't know about your kids, but my kids eat like shit no matter what. So it's like they might prefer like some hash browns, like frozen hash browns. Like I tried my best, as do probably most parents. But in the end, it's like if you can get your kid to eat throughout the day, you've won.
My experience with public school lunches, I will never forget the texture of the pizza they served us. It bounced. Okay, it was a square pizza and it bounced. Okay, and we were talking about a bunch of fifth graders having contests. How high they can make their pizza bounce if you dropped it from, like, you know, a certain height.
I have four words. Chicken a la king.
Shit on a shingle.
That is the worst food in the world. What was that white sauce that stuck together? Ew, oh my God.
Okay.
But yeah, so we're undecided.
No, I think NOMA, great job. I for profit, make money. Nonprofits, all committees kill great ideas. Form a, you want to kill a great idea? Form a committee.
How about
so
like
let
a
this
socialism?
One guy run it like a real czar.
How are they doing it? Are they having like gardens in the?
No, he's probably sourcing well, and he's probably making better food than some lunch ladies.
Or he's saying, you have $1.09 to feed a child per meal, and I'm going to do it for 73 cents, and I'm going to carve out the rest for my Range Rover.
Yeah, right. No, and also chefs are very good at extending the life of ingredients.
Yeah,
we're
going to serve them old, bad food.
Yeah, right.
Well, I think we should circle back on this one, see how it goes. Because right. When did the school year start? 2 days ago?
2 days ago. So we'll see if any of the kids get food poisoning.
Libby, I think
food poisoning if obesity rate.
Libby, you need to go undercover. You need to go to the Bronx and have some of this food.
With that face of yours,
and
you
report
could do
back.
It. Pose as a 5-year-old.
I think you can totally pass as a 5th grader.
Okay,
by the way, I would love to see Sacha Baron Cohen pose as a 3rd grader going into like a church or something and working with priests.
Can I also ask just what? Sorry, not to go back to it, but like privatization has proved successful in many areas where the government's inefficiencies have failed. Right? Period. End of story. We all agree at that. And there are also examples of the opposite.
So wait a second. If inefficiency have failed, doesn't that make them successful?
You are 100% correct. I'm so sorry for negating myself.
Can't. Now the show's
never
over.
Never listen to me again.
Next. And on that note, the show's over.
All right. So to follow up, we received a weird press release of a new product. This week it was Mama Joanna. So we thought maybe it would be a spinoff of a marijuana product. We thought Mike would be excited. But it's actually a premium spice rum from a company called Candela.
I'm still excited.
Mike's still excited.
Because it's
great.
An effort.
That's our...
Who's booze? Where is it?
That's effort. We're trying to keep Mike excited. All right. It's made by blending native tree bark, herbs, and spices with rum and honey. It's a 500-year-old recipe created by the shamans of the... Taino people?
Taino.
Taino, sure. And apparently, it's an aphrodisiac. So Dominicans call it Rompe Cama, Bedbreaker, and Viagra Dominicano.
Bedbreaker, wow.
So should we take the PR company up on their offer for a free sample? And what's your favorite edible aphrodisiac?
Okay, first of all, alcohol is the best aphrodisiac. I can't believe people get laid without alcohol. I mean, I can't imagine a scenario where that would even be possible.
Mike.
Thank you for sharing so much information with us, Mike.
All right, get Mike some of this rum.
I like it. Tree bark is an aphrodisiac. Fernet Branca, oysters. I mean, what else is an aphrodisiac?
I stick with Viagra.
Viagra? Rhino horn, isn't rhino horn?
Oh, like, yeah, white rhino.
Oh, right.
Unfortunately,
right.
There's a limited supply now.
If you rub it in a baby whale's, like,
yeah,
esophagus or something, I think it comes out even hornier.
Well, where has this been for all these years? They've been doing this for 500 years.
No,
I think it was a problem with the delivery system.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, it's also the first time it's here in the U.S.
Okay. So what aphrodisiacs?
Delivery system.
Or do people talk about that anymore? No, because Viagra
oysters.
Now is the thing.
Oysters.
Yeah, right.
I'm a believer in oysters, old school. Eating itself is very romantic. The whole act of eating is so
I thought you were going to say it's an aphrodisiac because if you spent that much money on a food, you're like, I'm going to have sex.
I tell you what happens. Most people just like watch porn and get horny. I think it's over.
I think it's more like you watch porn and then you just give up. You're like, I don't need any. But have you been to the bodega and seen all those like – those pills that they offer, there are tons and tons of aphrodisiac. And whenever you go to the bodega, I mean, that shelf space is precious. I mean, everything on that shelf sells. It's not like they're putting – although there is like a couple cans of cat food that are questionable. But I feel like that's prime real estate that they must be selling those things.
Well, I think boner pills are not aphrodisiacs.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, so
I mean, when you take them, they turn me on.
I mean, when you have a boner, though, you're just ready to go. So
it helps. I find it helps.
All right.
But I'm old school. I think oysters are good.
Do women use aphrodisiacs? No, you
do. But no, an aphrodisiac is something that you should be sharing.
Some people say like perfume, right?
Can be.
Oh, yeah. And that's not edible.
No, no, but all these things, and if you're turning the other person on, sure, of course. I mean, aphrodisiacs are meant to be shared, right? Isn't that part of the whole thing?
I mean, my pheromones are kind of a natural aphrodisiac.
I mean, I've got the sex drive of a 14-year-old boy. I don't need, you know, an aphrodisiac. What I do need is a situation in which to ply my trade.
I want to answer your question and say, yes, you should get a sample.
Yes. Yes.
Definitively, yes, get a sample.
All right, we're going to put that one. We're going to tag Emily with that.
All right. I'll respond to the PR firm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, if not next week, well, hopefully the week. Daniel,
and then we should drink it on the show and see if there's any kind of like.
See if we. Look, it can come free with the porchetta. Mm-hmm.
All right.
I'm already feeling some pretty good heat with Daniel. So
porchetta.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Grease is great aphrodisiac.
Some tree bark. Why not try it?
Now this is serious. This is very serious.
All right. So this changing next story. Now.
So
changing
also, can we have some silence alcohol in the studio?
All right. A moment, please. So spirits producer Heaven Hill Distilleries has filed a lawsuit against the Bob Dylan-owned whiskey brand Heaven's Door Spirits, claiming it infringes its trademark rights. Legendary songwriter Bob Dylan launched his own brand of Tennessee whiskey last year, producing a bourbon, double barrel whiskey, and a straight rye whiskey at a distillery house inside a consecrated church in Tennessee. Dylan's brand is called Heaven's Door and is named after his 1973 hit. But in April, a cease and desist letter was sent to Dylan's company arguing that its use of its trademark will create a likelihood of confusion, and it noted similarities between the stacked logo used for Heaven's Door and the one used by Heaven Hill.
Okay, may I address this? Regarding,
does anyone have anything to say?
Regarding
Libby?
This
oh, Mike.
Likelihood of confusion, not bloody likely, is the answer. I mean, look, Heaven Hill is like well whiskey. It's speed rack whiskey. And it's fine. It's an okay product. But it costs $12 for a liter of the stuff, okay? It costs $90 for a bottle of Bob Dylan's product. Oh. And it's very good. It's excellent. It's really, really, I've tried all three of them. I'm a mark for whatever Bob Dylan does. He'll put out a record next month. I'll buy it. You know, he'll come to town. I'll go see him. He puts out whiskey. Of course I bought it. It's beautiful. It's beautifully packaged. It's super, super, super expensive premium whiskey. No one is going to be confused by these two things. No one. This is a ridiculous, frivolous lawsuit. And what it doesn't mention is that in the bit that you read is that Heaven Hill wants Bob Dylan to give them all of his whiskey and all of his advertising material so they can destroy it.
Oh,
also, that's part of the deal. There's no confusion here.
Doesn't he own Heaven's Door?
I don't think anyone's going to confuse knock, knock, knocking on Heaven's Door with
Heaven's
Hill whiskey.
Is there a Heaven Hill or is there a door to heaven? I feel like neither one really exists. There's no confusion at all. I feel like there should – St. Peter's whiskey. Anybody?
Limbo. Okay, but wait. A deconsecrated church. That's cool.
Yeah.
Doesn't that just mean that you don't worship there?
It's a church that has fallen.
Well, God is always there. There's no deconsecrating a church.
Okay.
Well, they served wine there when it was a church.
That's true.
Yeah. And
I
mean, wafers.
I'm not a fan of anybody that sends cease and desist letters unless it's somebody, you know, from the meatball shop sending it to a meatball imposter. However, you know, and I do feel for Bob Dylan. He's got like 75 children with 75 different, you know, he's like paying a lot of child support. And I feel like $90 is the least thing we can do to thank him for all the, you know, music and social change he's done. And at the same time, if we want to get drunk, there's room for Heaven Hill as well.
I'm fine with Heaven Hill, but this is, I mean, very smart of someone to get some publicity for a brand that no one remembers. But the Bob Dylan product is extraordinary.
A song that connects him to that word. So
yeah,
he didn't
like,
just come
have,
out of
couldn't
network.
Couldn't he have sued them first? I mean, his song came out in 73.
Yeah,
I don't
knock,
think
knock, knocking on Heaven's Hill. We all know that song.
Yeah. Well, so what do you think Bob Dylan's going to do? Just put tons
gonna,
of lawyers,
he's
throw a ton of money
trash on. Talk him in the song.
Yeah. That's the next one.
I don't think he has anything to do. I'm sure he's got someone on it and just say, like, go away. First of all, he's Bob Dylan.
How old is he now? 78?
He's about 76, I think he just turned. Okay. Is that right? And he's still on the road. You know, he's still doing like
over 100
gigs. Over 100 gigs a year. He's climbing. And he plays these, like, shit towns. He plays everywhere. He's playing. This year he's coming up. I just saw the tour they announced, like, Tulsa and some other town I'd never even heard of in Oklahoma. Gigs in Texas. Gigs in Florida. Georgia. He's climbing up the East Coast. Atlantic City.
Well, he has a lot of child support to pay. So
I'm waiting for him to come to my backyard. I'm being lazy about it.
Has he ever been to Roberta's? Dylan? Nope. Brandon? No.
Bob's a troubadour, you know. He needs a whiskey brand. Yeah. It's good stuff. I'll tell you the stuff I bought. It practically drank itself.
All right.
It was an aphrodisiac.
Emily, take us to food trends.
All right. We're on to I have two questions about changing food trends. One, I hear bologna is cool now, especially on breakfast sandwiches. And two, artisan ketchups. How do we feel about both?
First of all, every single place that sells artisan ketchup, any of those artisan ketchups, also has Heinz. And the waiters are like, 100%, yes, I'll go get you Heinz. I understand. You can tell just by looking at it. No artisan ketchup is as good as Heinz. It's just not.
But I'm using high fructose corn syrup in my artisanal ketchup.
Oh, you think that real Heinz taste?
I think that there's a real. These two things are actually these two questions actually tie together, because one of the great food trends of 2019 is going to be the acceptance of MSG as for what it really is, which is amazing and great and naturally occurring and blah, blah, blah. So the reason that Heinz specifically is so popular is because it's chock full of this delicious food stuff that is hard to get anywhere else, MSG. So what I believe should happen is these artisan folks should use their hands to make some MSG and add it to their ketchup, and then maybe it'll get a chance. But as long as artisan ketchup doesn't taste as good, definitively, ketchup is a condiment, right? Condiments, if they don't taste good and make the food taste better, then what's the point of using them? Like, you know, no one wants to put garbage on their food and just because it was made by hand.
Artisan sometimes still sucks.
Do you consider condiments aphrodisiacs?
100%. And I use condiments just as a prophylactic as well.
That was a mayonnaise sales pitch right there.
Bologna?
Wow.
Nobody?
Nah. Bologna's not cool.
Bologna, is this mortadella? Are we talking about mortadella?
No,
or is this like a fried bologna sandwich?
I'm with you on mortadella. This is bologna.
A fried bologna sandwich is very delicious. There's no question about it.
What's the condiment with that? Mayo?
Mustard.
Mustard.
Ketchup. Yeah, any forced meat, so it's a mustard thing. Unless you're from New York and you do onions and ketchup for your hot dogs.
New Jersey, man. Taylor pork roll. Ooh. That's where it's at. Pork roll.
Yeah, well,
pork roll.
Interchangeable.
No, I'm from the Dirty Jurors, the 201. I know it's pork roll.
I have two words. Knish. Oh, wait, one word. Knish. That's the best.
Do you have all ketchup potato with your knish?
Do they still serve it at any of the Sabourette hot dog stands?
Yeah, Johanna Schimmel's, they have that.
That's the best, but I don't know. I mean, can you still get a knish at like a hot dog stand, like the Sabret guy? They used to, right?
They replaced him with Jamaica beef patties.
Ooh, which are not bad.
Delicious. Not bad either. Not bad.
Delicious.
Not bad.
If they had the knish, they wouldn't have had the bees last week.
Oh, yeah, there was a bee attack. I don't know, Mike, you were
in
Spain.
Was it an attack?
A
bee attack?
No.
They attacked the Sabret umbrella.
Disbursement.
And I remember Emily or Libby, whoever read it with great urgency, was like, the weight was so much, the umbrella was weighed down.
Yep.
But no one died. No one got stung. It was just too hot on the roof, so all the bees left.
And then the police bee vacuumer came and vacuumed them up.
The bee vacuumer. That's his official title.
Yeah.
So, I say the bees. I love when wildlife kills people. Every once in a while, I want to see that.
It was not even a sting, supposedly.
No, I know. But, like, let wildlife get their, vengeance
their
on
comeuppance.
Us. Yeah.
All right. The media is claiming that with rising rents, the New York coffee shop is dying.
Enemy of the people.
Or already dead.
Oh, I love coffee shops so much.
Yeah.
I bump into Brandon at Junior's, which I would basically call a coffee
shop. They're basically
shop.
Diners, right?
Yeah. Yes.
No.
Eggs,
they're New
pancakes.
York diners.
They have 7,000 things on the menu.
Right. But what is a coffee shop?
First you have to define it. Secondly, you have to say, you know what killed the coffee shop in New York? It was a little thing called the credit card. And all of a sudden, the government was able to track sales and start taxing. And 30% of the profit went into the pockets of the man. Am I allowed to say that? Or like hashtag the person.
That's
the person.
One of the 70 genders of humans that we do allow to be discussed here.
Great,
I used to love eating in coffee shops. That's what you young folks call diners. You know, because, but I ate there at 4 in the morning after I got thrown out of the bar.
Bacon, egg, and cheese, a cheeseburger that tastes delicious.
I still hold all my editorial meetings in Cozy Superburger on Broadway. With my author meetings, I always bring my authors there.
Grilled cheese with bacon and tomato.
Matzo ball soup and a grilled cheese.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But it still costs. I mean, they just need to charge a lot more. But how fun is it? It's the kids' favorite thing. They get, 30 pancakes and syrup and everything. You pay extra to get.
But
them
again, anyone
syrup.
Outside of New York would just call that a diner.
Yeah, diners are dying out in New York.
I have a friend that had many diners, a Greek dude, many diners, and when credit cards were introduced, he ended the diner game because his profits went to the government because they were tracking taxes. And so this is just another time when unfortunately, rising costs are not keeping up with what folks think it's worth spending for food. And, you know, there's an inequality there and people aren't going out of business.
I feel like I read this story like once a year in the New York Times that the coffee shops, diners are going out of business. And it has to do with the changing demo of New York City, that the old people who depended on these places, like to go and sit and have dinner and have, you know, it's kind of basically a square meal. You know, get a piece of chicken and some potatoes and some, you know, very mushy peas or something.
I mean, look at the ones that do still exist. They're expensive. Go to Junior's.
If you,
speaking
no,
of, Junior's is a very expensive diner. Yeah.
Well, but they give you a basket of free bread. Like Madison Avenue on the Upper East Side still has three guys. I think they have a
Nectar. Charges like $18 for a cheeseburger.
But it's ironic that those are in the, as you said, I guess it's demographic based. Those are still the people who are wanting to frequent, and it's an older crowd.
It's not a point of prestige to go there. I mean, some people still go to McDonald's.
I went to Barney Greengrass really last night, yeah, and it was $47 for the sturgeon and salmon platter.
That's not a coffee shop.
You know what? They serve coffee. First thing first, they have shitty coffee. That makes it a coffee shop.
Well, I'm glad Eisenberg's is still up and running. I was good friends with Josh, the previous owner, and the new guys say they're going to try to keep it as you know, close to authentic as it has been. But that's the oldest lunch counter in New York City. A lunch counter, is that kind of a diner or a coffee shop? Because they're like very famous for their tuna sandwich. Also, all your basic eggs and omelets and chocolate egg creams, of course, too.
Of course, chocolate egg cream. Tom's is near my neighborhood. If they did very high ingredients, you know, very, very good ingredients, then they could charge whatever and it would be cool.
Has the New York Times stopped into a Starbucks lately?
Not to do a story.
Is a Starbucks a, I'm saying, is Starbucks a coffee shop? Because they seem to be
That's everywhere.
Their food is so terrible.
It's on every corner.
I'm just saying it's a coffee shop. It's a newly imagined coffee shop. It's where people come to commune and eat. It's the third place.
That's where I met Ann. I was at a Starbucks, and she was at a Starbucks across the street, and we saw each other.
And then you locked eyes.
We walked over, yeah.
You were on your first date?
Yeah.
Like you hadn't met before?
Well, listen, let's talk. There was a passing away of a big coffee shop guy.
You take this one.
No, you take it.
Well, speaking
you're
of,
our point guard.
Oh, thanks.
I'm a rebounder.
Speaking of coffee shops, longtime New York chef and restaurateur and a friend of, I think, Heritage Radio, Kenny Shopson passed away this week.
He wasn't a friend of Heritage Radio. He was semi a friend of Ann Saxel.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Essex Market friend. Friends and customers have been mourning his death on social media and in print this week. New York Magazine writes that Shopson was known for being vulgar and gruff with a boiling anger that was easily let loose. But he was also one of the most admired chefs in New York. Did you guys know him?
Kenny Shopson. Shopson's. I mean, you know, he would throw people out all the time and he used terrible words. I mean, police were always outside because people were complaining about what he would say to people and stuff like that.
Was he an incredible chef because he had a menu that had 500 items on it and he could cook it in a kitchen the size of this radio station?
Yeah, it was amazing.
Because that is a talent right there.
Well,
you literally order anything.
Apparently,
I don't know.
He started
did he like
on Bedford.
Run to the store to get SpaghettiOs for you if you needed them?
Yeah. No,
I do appreciate places like that where they just say yes to anything you want.
Yeah.
And then it just appears.
By the way, that is the future of restaurants, I think. It's like technically the red tablecloth. It's a little bit the coffee shop, Kenny Shopson's, where you're not given a menu with 12 options. The chef is like, what are you in the mood for? We got lamb. I can do anything with lamb for you. I can make pasta. I can grill it. I can make it on a pita bread. I can do it. I like that. It's truly catering to the customer and not the customer catering to some chef's vision with like three options on the menu.
I like the attitude, I want to say. I think that's part of it too with Kenny Shopson. I remember there was this awful, awful, awful deli in Austin, Texas called like Schmuckies or some fake Jew name. And it said, New York food without the attitude. And like, I think it was, I want the attitude.
Right.
Like, if you're not going to be rude to me, why would I possibly go in there?
No way. No way. You can be a great chef. That's great. I would never work for that.
Well, think about it. People go to Wiener Circle in Chicago Wiener just Circle to get best. Screamed at.
No, but that's different. That's like a gimmick. If this is like you're going to work every day and someone's yelling at you, like,
no he
way.
Was yelling. He,
But also, you need to see the demographic of people who worked for him. They were also like image. images jokes. Of himself. Yes. So it wasn't like it was this guy like raining down on these poor people. They were also giant
they were
assholes.
Into it.
So pretty much all of the other people who worked, it was just a
you know
it was just
what you're
a waterfall of shittiness. Right. And then it just ran out into the customer base, which was part of what its appeal yeah. was. People went there to get abused.
And then also he would turn away business. I mean, he was almost anti-business. If he didn't like the people, he would be anti-business. And one time he got like a terrible, terrible, terrible review. And they were like, so did you respond? Did you write an email? He's like, no, I didn't want those people to have my email address. You know, he was basically his little shop was his world and that was it. So that I admire. But basically, he was a pain in the ass.
I think there should be an investigation into whether Shopsins was an unsafe work environment.
It's staying open, apparently. I think his daughter, son.
Yeah, and a little bit the two daughters, Melinda.
I give it like T-minus 20 minutes till they get sued.
Oh, my God.
All right. And we'll do this one quickly. This is a recurring question that we have asked before. Our partners in radio, the Kitchen Sisters, started the Keepers Hotline, asking for listeners to call in with stories regarding activists, archivists, curators, collectors, historians, and protectors of the free flow of information ideas. Who have you met who deserves to be on this list?
Well, it was very funny when we did this question. We do this question a little bit now. All the young people were like, we don't have anybody, you know, because.
That's not true.
Well, I mean, it was a little bit of a struggle to find it. Meanwhile, Steve Jenkins, who was here, who I named, by the way, because of all what he had done for European Cheeses, he was like, I have 200 million people that I could mention because it comes from that era. So, I mean, I'll start. I'll say Angelo Garo, who is our. He's a smith, a blacksmith in San Francisco, and he knows how to make balsamic vinegar, wine. He hunts. He can cook camping. He knows how to cut down a tree and all. He knows how to make his own fire. And I just think that that's kind of cool. He makes charcuterie. He makes his own olive oil. He can fish in the bay there in San Francisco. And there's a terroir there, which is like terroir of the brain. That's very, you know, respectable. And I think a lot of terroir in the world has died out because it never got passed on. And then the person died never having passed on all this built up knowledge in his heads and hands or her heads and hands.
So. And that's why we're looking at Kenny Shopson's family.
Well, yeah, by the way, his son did not know how to make 30 or 40 items on that menu. And even when Kenny was
out
very,
of the 900,
very old,
there was a deficit of 30 items.
He would sit there and they'd be like, we need you. Someone ordered like blisters on his sisters and only he knew how to do it. So now the son's going to have to do it or take it off the menu. But I'm sure he learned.
What was that they ordered?
Blisters on my sisters. That what, was like.
It's kind of like ants on a log.
Yeah.
Celery with.
It's like ants
butter?
On a log.
Mm-hmm. Similar.
Yeah. But with no yolk on it. Yeah.
And that's no yolk.
Is diner slang still a thing? Do people still speak diner slang?
Waffle House has their own language.
And whiskey down. That's
yeah,
right.
Moons over my hammy.
Do you know what whiskey down means?
Yeah, rye toast. Yeah, I know that. I'm 1,000 years old. Of course I know that.
So what's your who's
I
your
love,
person?
I love this. I want a tutorial. It's like learning Yiddish, but I want to learn diner lingo.
Who's your protector? Who's your activist, archivist, curator, collector, historian? Mike, you must have a bunch.
Well, I just feel like...
some old publisher
I'm soaking in it, dude. You know, I mean...
You're saying
that's
me?
Yes, you, because you founded this radio station, and this radio station has over how many hundreds of thousands of hours of content right now, and so
you
many
can thank
people,
me and Brandon so, for that. So Brandon tried to kick us out so many times, but no, just kidding.
I'm currently trying to kick you out. It's been nearly impossible. You're like some weird STD that nobody
just
even
doesn't
knows
go
about.
Away.
You're just like, there's no cure. Nobody knows what it is. You can't get it off your
That's
your
my
junk.
Style. That's my style. So
I'm one of those annoying young people, so I'm just going to elect Al Gore's internet. I want Al Gore's internet is in, you know, just that's it.
Wow. Come on, Mike. Who's your guy? Who's your I can't believe it's a hard question, apparently. Because I think back in the 40s and 50s, you would be like, the librarian, or the guy who, you know, delivers the milk, or in case relationship with all these farmers. I don't know. I mean. Rick Bishop, I mean, you know, someone who knows a shit ton of stuff.
You're right, though, what you said before, that it is harder for the younger generation, but also that most of the people we would fit into this category are not in our generation. They're like the older, wiser, they tend to be European, they tend to have like more of that mentality. Like I'm thinking of my best friend's parents, who are Italian, one's from Naples and one's from Milan, and like they do everything homemade, mm-hmm. and everything is like passed down tradition.
Or you said it before, Yiddish. Someone who speaks fluent Yiddish, I mean, that would be someone who's keeping a language alive.
Yeah, no, for sure. But there's so few people left that unless you took the time to learn from a grandparent or, you know, Rosetta Stone. Do they do Yiddish?
I'm going to throw this one to the future and say Tony Butler, but not maybe give him like five more years in Spain and then going to be the, like, that's going to be my go-to.
Yeah, no, that's a good
I want to recommend everyone go to YouTube and see the movie I made called Grandma Makes the Kugel. This was my contribution as my 93-year-old grandmother making a kugel, and there are subtitles so you can follow along with the recipe.
Oh.
Okay, and she was 93 when she was twirling that noodle pudding, you know.
Now, is kugel a Yiddish?
That's a Yiddish.
Thank you, number one.
Peter, hit the laugh button. The Jewish laugh button. It's the one to the left.
Kugel is a Yiddish.
I get it. I got it.
Okay,
thank you.
But you chose not to laugh.
No, it's not that. It just reminded me of my father's joke about me being the squid yid, because I cleaned calamari for my first job.
The squid yid.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we're going to jump to a quick break, and after, we're going to talk with Daniel Holdson all about his new project, Project Foodie.
Stay tuned.
Take it away, Vitor.
Well, she's her own. She's her own female. She's her own female. That's why I like.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. Since the early 1900s, Emmy has been a passionate supporter of farmers, cheesemakers, and family tradition. They believe in sustainable agriculture and respect for the people, land, and animals that make their business possible. Remaining dedicated to tradition, they strive to lead the industry in innovation, ensuring they bring you only the highest quality, best-tasting cheese from Switzerland. Emmy is best known for importing more than 80% of the Swiss Gruyere into the United States, but that's not to overshadow their other specialty cheeses, including Kaltbach cave-age cheeses, Der Scharfe Max, Appenzeller, Tête de Moine, and traditional Emmentaler. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
All right, welcome back. This is the Main Course OG, broadcasting live on Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Next up is the Maillard Reaction. My question for everyone is, well, more of a statement to start. My best friend's starting a new job this week. What do you think is, how do you like to make a first impression on the first day of work? A new job.
I have a friend that came into work, one of my employees actually, who's now a friend, he came to work, he said, you always go stoned the first day. Because if you're stoned the first day, your boss will never suspect it moving forward.
I'm with this. I was going to say.
That's really wise right there.
I go in with wherever I go, there's always a kitchen wherever I work. And so I will bring a huge thing of saran wrap and mess it up. And be like, oh, it's messed up, and then I'll fix it so that it looks. And I'm like, I'll do this for everybody.
Said that on I feel like that was not Patrick's.
That was a recent guest.
I mean, that was episode like six.
Yeah. Rewind. Like, let's play back the old episodes.
Dude, you're like the night nurse who, like, you know, who you know, poisons his patients and runs in to save them.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
So what's
your one?
You're
a psychopath.
Do you have something better than getting stoned?
The first day? Getting drunk and like possibly starting a fire in a wastebasket. This is good.
This is not helpful advice.
I think bring a notebook. That was good advice someone gave me.
Bring a notebook.
I'm ready to take notes at any moment. You seem like you're very ready.
Actually, you should bring a stone tablet.
A stone tablet. I saw your notebook for the taste notes for the porchetta we tasted, and one of the taste notes that Libby wrote was nice.
Okay, then I went back and
it actually
said very tender. So
nice
I just reread
and very
it.
Tender. Okay, good right. Maillard question. That was the best one all week.
Oh,
okay,
thanks.
Rude.
Anyway, Daniel Holtzman in the house.
Yes,
welcome.
God bless.
So tell us about Project Foodie. Do you like being on camera? How long does it take to foam each recipe? That's what was written by Emily.
I would have said it with a little bit of inflection, yeah, not we're looking quite for like inflection, that. Patrick. Do you like being on camera?
I'm looking forward to this thing. I have this idea. It's radio, but with pictures. Okay. I call it Radio Vision.
I like it.
I think it could catch on. It could be bigger than Al Gore's internet.
Would you do that in color or black and white?
One step at a time.
All right. Well, tell us about Project Foodie. Yeah, I have it on my app. I have an app.
Listen, the cookbooks are an amazing accoutrement
resource?
For your accoutrement for your coffee table. Hmm. It's beautiful for people to look through, and they have they document wonderful recipes. And have great pictures, but they're not great at teaching people how to cook. They presuppose the fact that you know how to cook in order to follow a recipe, right? In order to follow a recipe, you need to already know how to cook because it says stuff like saute or sear or poach or other terms that if I'd never learned how to cook, which is passed down from person to person, generation to generation, and I don't want to get into second wave feminism and advertising in the 50s and how the whole thing fell apart. What I will say is today, more people want to cook and are passionate about cooking, and fewer people know how to cook than ever before in history. So we tried to build a resource to help people learn how to cook and make it easy and accessible and fun. Cooking is something that I share with my family. My mom and I cooked together, and it was very special for us. The kitchen is the epicenter of our household. For so many people that know that love and warmth, that is something that they identify with. But there are so many people that have been denied it, and so we're trying to bring a little bit of that into the world. It's free. I don't make a penny. I'm broke as a joke. Donate, please. Send a check. Send anything. Send I'll take crackers.
And you're using Radio Vision as the technology to teach people?
Absolutely. Internet. We're available on the internet. You can check it out online. You could download the app on the
Now that
iTunes.
Costs $1.99.
It's free, man. Oh. It's free. This whole
there
series.
Are,
you have to buy an $800
version.
You do have to buy a $1,000 iPhone, unfortunately. But once you have the phone, the
so
app
you download
is free.
It, and what do you know?
You download the app, you search through a plethora of delicious, mouth-watering recipes, all the way from snacks to full meals. I mean, we have a four-hour Thanksgiving feast. Thanksgiving's coming up. If you want to cook a Thanksgiving that will knock your family's socks off, you download the app. You search through. You decide what you want to cook. We show you the tools. We overview the ingredients. You can order the ingredients online through the app. And then you hit play, and there's
while
a chef.
While you're cooking?
There's a chef in the kitchen. The video plays alongside of you. So basically, every step of the way, there's a chef there to lend you confidence. So when it says sauté, it doesn't just say sauté. It shows you how to sauté. And you can watch them sauté along with you. And them is me, which is amazing. Amazing. A-M-A-Z-I-N-G, because the guy really knows how to cook. He's the best ever.
All right.
And how does this guy like being on camera?
Yeah. By the way, this guy, it's not that he likes being on camera. It's that the camera likes him.
Yeah, no. You have a great face for Radio Vision.
Is this all done in the third person?
No.
And then... Now wait, this
at
is
some
a
point he breaks the fourth wall and it becomes incredibly interesting when he starts talking to you personally about how bad you're doing, just like his mother did.
Right.
Now your brother is involved with this, right? He's your producer?
He's a Hollywood producer.
Is a multi-Emmy award-winning television and documentary film producer who happens to be one of the greatest, kindest, warmest, generous, most generous, just people I know. And not just because he's my brother, he really has an industry-wide reputation. And in an industry that's full of skunks, being like a great person. And, you know, he and I both loved this idea of sharing something that was a meeting place of our two crafts, where art meets craft, cooking and filmmaking, to try and work together as an excuse. Because he has kids. And when you have kids, it's hard to find time to work, to spend together unless you're really working together. Is that fair enough?
Very nice, very nice.
I could be more passionate and, like, get into it.
No, I felt the passion.
Should have opened the show.
There was a real lack of passion here, and I think the audience has felt it. Probably everyone's asleep at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
We've been going downhill since the Ike Turner song.
Can we talk more about this Maillard reaction?
No. So you travel a lot. Can you discuss your opinions on food that we eat in different cities and cultures? That's the broadest question that's ever been asked on this station. But come on, what are your impressions on food? You travel around the world all the time.
I travel around the world all the time, and I'm a little bit nervous and dismayed, and I think that in America we might be getting it not necessarily wrong. We might be taking a left turn when we should just be going straight or right, which is I feel like there's this weird form follows function relationship that we're starting to create with food here, where, you know, the idea that food is supposed to feed us like Soylent, and it's not supposed to taste good necessarily. And that, like, healthy food can taste good, right? And the idea that it's healthy and therefore it's good is erroneous. It's healthy, therefore it's good is no. It's healthy, therefore it's healthy, fair enough. It's good because it tastes good. If food doesn't taste good, what's the point? And I think that there's this weird mishmash where everybody expects every restaurant now to have this, like, healthy food, even if it doesn't taste good. And there are a few of us stalwarts out there that say, like, I would prefer not to have food on my menu that doesn't taste good. And I think a lot of places in the world have examples of healthy food that are very delicious and healthy diets that are very delicious. And I would like to see America follow that direction. Fair mm-hmm. enough?
I think you're absolutely right, but I think it's a small percentage of people, though, who can afford, you know, an $11 juice that tastes like shit and is supposed to, like, you know, make you as strong as Popeye. I don't, you know, I think we live in kind of a bubble gear in Brooklyn.
I'm sure there's a room for that.
What are you going to say, Brandon?
Oh, I have no idea. I lost.
As in,
I lost it.
So now, where do you travel? You just came back from.
I just came back from Macau, China, right? Which is pretty amazing place, actually. I was really excited about the delicious food there. I'm going to Mexico City next week, and then I'm going to New Orleans because that's my favorite place. I travel around a lot. The reality is that I'm happy that America is catching up to this idea that we have to eat three meals a day, and you might as well make it something special and exciting and fun and actually enjoy it rather than just, you know, have a utilitarian approach.
Well, America is the land of extreme. So this is, you know, we do everything in extreme. We don't have balance for anything. No, there's no like network called the Balance Network. Is there a network called the Balance Network? There should be a network called Balance, because this is the thing. You go other countries and you see people have refrain and they have learned balance in their life and how to juggle the difference between what my body needs, what my body wants. And I think that's probably where some of this problem comes from. America is very extreme. We go all the way to the right or we go all the way to the left. We have a hard time just finding the middle and sticking to it.
So New Orleans, you can open a meatball shop there?
We don't have any plans to open a meatball shop in New Orleans right now. My goal when I go to New Orleans is to vacation and not work.
Got it.
But I will say, Daniel did revisit the way people perceive fast food, I think, in New York. He really started a trend with the meatball shop, which basically you get a full four-course meal for under $10, and you can have fun doing it. I mean, you got the meatballs, you got a side, you got a piece of bread, and it was under $10 using 100% sustainable meats and stuff. And you got to pick and make your own sauces and stuff. It was fun to go to. It was like a party.
It's still under $10?
No. Well, maybe not.
It's a three-course meal now. Same great price, but half the food.
No,
it's
but I mean,
a diet thing.
It's bread. It's your meatball as you want it.
And a veggie.
There's a mispricing going on in the entire culinary industry that unfortunately is being driven by restaurant openings that's being driven by private equity investment in restaurants. It's being driven by zero interest rate money lending, which is coming to an end. So we're going to see, I think, a lot of restaurants go up in price to match the fact that labor and cost of goods has gone up. Because the truth is that when I was 20 years old, I made $10 an hour or $12 an hour. And today, cooks are still making the same amount of money, which is just not reasonable for anybody when rents and everything else twice or three or four or five, six times more expensive. So unfortunately, the meatball shop is the same price as when it opened or a little bit more expensive. But hopefully at one point in the near future, everybody will recognize that great food, it costs money. Mm-hmm. And if you want really cheap food that's really delicious, download Project Foodie and learn how to cook, people. All right.
Good plug.
Hey.
So you're opening in D.C., dude? What's that city like?
Washington, D.C. is this vibrant, amazing, beautiful, wonderful city that I didn't know really. Like, I knew Washington, D.C. is this mall, and I didn't mean like the Suffern Mall or whatever. Like the mall where they have the statues. What is that? The Washington Mall with the monument. Oh, yeah.
The Washington Monument at one end and Lincoln on the other, on the other side. And the reflecting pool and, and all that. All that good
slave
stuff.
Owners. So I went down to Washington, D.C. to tour the city as a possible, you know, second city for the meatball shop. And I was blown away by how much fun it was. We spent a couple days down there. We got drunk. We ate delicious food. They're amazing restaurants. And the museums are unrivaled in the world. It's incredible. I ate a Maiden the other day. That is an incredible restaurant. It's like a new... I don't know what exactly. Somewhere in the Middle Eastern restaurant, all wood fired. It was one of the best meals I've had all year.
Huh. So DC is important. So meatball shop in DC, 14th Street, right?
14th Street between R&S. So they did it. They built this whole place on this. What's it called when they? It's like a. There's some fancy word for how they laid the city out, and it's built after some European design that.
All the circles, you mean?
Yeah, all the circles and everything. And it's like, it's so easy. It's 14th Street Northwest, which means it's 14 streets northwest of Washington and First Street Southeast, which
if you're from a local, you know what that means.
Like New York, it goes from 1 to 142, from 1 to 12, left to right, south to north. All Come right. on, people.
On your $1,000 iPhone... You can Google Map it.
Oh, they do have Google Maps down there.
They do have. Yeah, it works.
100%.
The only thing I did hear about D.C. is everything closes a little earlier.
D.C. is not the most hopping town. I tried to get drunk, and the reality is that they closed first. but, you know, maybe that's a good thing. The meatball shop is going to be open regular late hours, so people can have a late night snack and enjoy themselves and maybe even get laid.
At the table.
Oh, meatballs are an afternoon.
No tablecloths, people. No tablecloths.
And on that note... Thanks, Daniel, for coming.
Yeah, this was an exciting
thank you for a great show. Please tune in. Stick around for Tech Bites coming up at 11, and we will see you guys next week.
Thanks, Vitor.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Riding all around town for joy. Blow your horn, Raymond. Blow.